Welcome back, everybody, to the Axis of Easy podcast. This week, huge news out of the UK as Apple actually goes a step further than they were legally mandated to and starts age verifying at the OS and device level. We're going to talk a lot about that. And that's a story that's going to come up a bunch in a bunch of different locations over the next few months. You can bank on that. Also had another big fun leak, TELUS and Loblaws here in Canada, leading to, of all the things, an anime streaming service also leaking data. We'll talk about that, of course. If you have an older iOS device or one that's not up to date, look out because Dark Sword is coming for you. We also have some other stories on the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And as always, this is Axis of Easy.
It's time for the Axis of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Okay, so starting as we always do, our quote of the week from last week: you're often most creative when you're the least productive. That was from Austin Kleon. No one got that one. This week's quote: humanity is acquiring all the right technology for all the wrong reasons. Man, very, very important quote for the moment that we're in the modern world. If you know the answer, you can send it in to us in the comments. First one to get it right gets their next round renewals on EasyDNS. Remember, no Googling. You can only look at your age verification pop-up for the answer, which is where we're going to start. The first story this week: Apple age verification and the new UK laws coming into effect. Now, I'll just note that there's a lot of people talking about how this was a forced move by the United Kingdom. I'm, of course, talking about Apple verifying age at the device level, asking you to prove basically how old you are, your date of manufacture, as it were, when you load up your device and install the OS. This isn't really what the law requires. Apple's going above and beyond here. They're supposed to be, the law that is supposed to be verifying ages for different websites and services in a way that is a little more ironclad than just a checkbox, yes or no type thing. And Apple here has gone above and beyond, like I mentioned, doing it at the OS level. It's a voluntary overreach. And it seems to me like Apple, who I've really defended on this program a bunch over the years, is becoming like a sort of preferred, they're almost begging really to be a preferred compliance layer for the government of the United Kingdom and probably also other governments around the world, which is bizarre. You may remember that Apple pulled their data storage service, their iCloud service, 2 years ago, maybe, when the same government or the same country asked for end-to-end encryption backdoors into data that was being stored by retail users, average consumers, you know, you or I. And I really thought that given that history and given that Apple has really, really planted their flag on encryption, whether it's been iMessage or iCloud, whether it's been device level encryption, they famously will not help you get into an iPhone, not because they don't necessarily want to, but because they can't. There's not, you know, an obvious way for them to do it. They don't leave holes in the OS and the device. This is really frustrating for me. This comes, of course, at a time when a lot of operating systems at the PC and home compute level, also at the router level, you know, you may know that the US is no longer allowing foreign manufactured routers. Chinese manufactured routers specifically is the sort of target, but it's all foreign manufactured routers. There's a real clampdown on what devices are going to be allowed to provide you in terms of freedom and digital access, let's say, without verifying your identity. Really, that's what this is. You can call it an age verification push, but clearly here what we're seeing is an identity push. And it's unfortunate because really Apple and other providers have done such a good job in allowing for a lot of grassroots movements to take hold. You know, famously in the Middle East, there's been riots and revolts, governments upended on the back, presumably, of people using these devices to stay in touch with each other and post anonymously. Twitter, of course, now X, is probably the most key freedom of speech hub on the planet. You can post there anonymously. There's no requirement for you to give your phone number or a proper email or anything. Many people do anyways, but you don't have to. If you were a state dissident and you were trying to lead a color revolution or something, you wouldn't want your avatar to have your picture and your ID to be baked into that username. And yet here we are. You know, there's an example here of Apple going the exact wrong direction. Again, I'll just point to legislation that's also coming about in places like Canada. The UK obviously already has this legislation. They've jailed, I think, 12 or 13,000 people since the legislation rolled out. But the idea is basically that if you're committing a quote unquote speech crime online, then there needs to be an opportunity to pursue an arrest or to pursue legal action. Very difficult, obviously, if you're anonymous. And anonymous, you know, you will not be anymore. So keep an eye on this story. Keep an eye on this trend. Australia, UK, Canada, the Commonwealth nations really going in this direction. You know, sort of a fun stat, NordVPN reported a 1,000% spike in UK purchases, and ProtonVPN saw a 1,400% spike in signups in the immediate aftermath of the UK Online Safety Act enforcement. So, you know, it's interesting to talk about this stuff, but it's good to see on the ground at the retail level, again, you know, sort of the normie or close to normie level, getting a huge spike in people understanding how important privacy is. And there's only so many things governments can do without looking like they're crying out for help, right? There comes a time when an action like this is no longer viewed as a projection of power, but rather a whimper of fear. And I think many people are viewing this as the latter and not the former. So good to see. Let's talk about EasyDNS. EasyDNS has released an MCP server and skills for your AI agents. So basically what's happened here is Mark and the team have put together a OctoDNS wrapper skill for your AI agent of choice, I suppose, although Claude is the one that's mentioned here, using a model context protocol that gives AI agents programmatic read or read and write access to your DNS zone, mail forwarders, and it's all done via the EasyDNS REST API. Pretty cool. There's obviously like a lot going on in the sort of AI space, agentic AI space specifically. And these MCPs have been around for a few years now. Anthropic released the first one in 24. I have a little bit of data here that there's over 1,000 MCP servers now on public GitHubs, which is insane. Like, talk about an adoption curve. You're seeing this stuff everywhere, by the way, not just in DNS. I believe that Mark is the first to do this for the DNS side. Giving an agent controlled and permissioned access to something like this is pretty powerful. So you have agents handling domain migrations, mail routing changes, infrastructure failovers autonomously. I believe this is also handled through Telegram. I don't want to jump the gun on that, and Mark will tell me after the fact if I'm wrong. But you know, if you want to learn more about this, you can go to, what is the website here? I have it handy. It is... well, it's in the show notes, but there's a blog post on EasyDNS called EasyDNS-MCP Model Context Protocol Server for the REST API is now available. So there you go. And it's on their GitHub as well. A little bit of background on that. And I hope you guys will check that out. If you're using EasyDNS, there's really no reason not to be using as much of their firepower as you can get your hands on. Let's talk about a data breach. Actually, there's two data breaches here. I'm going to roll into one story since I'm flying the plane solo today. TELUS Digital obviously had a breach a little while ago. They tried to downplay it. I mean, this is always the case. These guys try and downplay every data breach they have as either no information that was sensitive was grabbed, or we don't have to worry about the breach because we've got everything under control now. There was, you know, a quick notification. We locked the intruder out. We've identified who it was, blah, blah, blah. They actually didn't do any of that stuff this time. So make of that what you will. What's actually been uncovered here is that the attackers were able to pivot from the TELUS database to the Crunchyroll database, which is a American-based anime streaming platform. So if you're into, I really don't know any anime shows besides Bleach and Dragon Ball Z. That's probably aging me more than it's making me sound like I'm, you know, in tune with that ecosystem. But anyway, they had a huge leak there. And now, you know, Crunchyroll is saying that they got a bunch of names, phone numbers, unique emails, stuff like that. And then in the same vein, Loblaw, a big data breach on March 10th. I'll read right from the news release here, which is obviously buried, you know, deep in their website tree. It releases the statements. I don't know how many people are going to loblaw.ca to find this stuff, but I'll read from the article. After identifying suspicious activity on a contained, non-critical part of its IT network, the company has determined that a criminal third-party accessed some basic customer information, such as names, phone numbers, and email addresses. Again, really only basic information when it's not yours. When it is yours, you may feel differently about it. The investigation indicates that PC Financial was not affected by the breach. To access the company's digital services, customers will need to log back in. So it's interesting, you know, there's no major breach, but yet they're going to ask you to, I would guess, sort of re-identify, re-coat your online persona with them to continue using the platform, which is too bad. It's another example, by the way. That's basically all that the news release says. Another example of short and sweet and to the point, but probably missing some important details that, of course, we will hear more about on Access of Easy in the next little while. Just as an aside here, Shiny Hunters, who is the culprit of these breaches, Shiny Hunters claims to have stolen approximately 1 petabyte, look that one up, of data from Telus Digital, roughly 1,000 terabytes. The entire printed collection of the U.S. Library of Congress is estimated at about 10 terabytes. So the Telus breach is 100 libraries of Congress worth of data, which I think includes recorded support calls, emails, phone numbers, IDs, all this stuff, as well as, I believe, some payment information. So great day to be a Telus customer, a Crunchyroll customer, or a Loblaw customer. Again, can't hide, man. There's incompetence everywhere. And thanks to the internet, I mean the free internet for the moment, we hear about these stories much sooner and in much more detail than I think the people who are being hit by these attacks would prefer us hear about them. So let's talk now about our friends at, I hate to say it, Apple again, Dark Sword iOS exploit, Google's threat intelligence group, and iFerify uncovered a hacking campaign targeting iPhone users using an advanced hacking tool called Dark Sword. There's a newer version of Dark Sword and it's been published on GitHub. It's a full chain iOS exploit that chains 6 vulnerabilities across 2 exploit paths, including 3 zero days. Those are CVE 2620700, 20 as in 20700, CVE 2025 43529, and CVE 2025 14174. Without getting into the nitty gritty here, you can obviously read the article if you want the sort of high level technical details. I'll just note that it's really targeting older devices. So again, you know, Len and I talk about this a lot, that if you have an older iPhone or an older iPad or an older whatever device, there's really no reason past a certain date to keep using it, probably, honestly. But if you are really intent on using it or don't want to buy a new one or can't afford a new one, I would say the most important thing is you keep your iPhone, iPad, whatever, as up to date as possible. Although some devices obviously won't let you update to the modern, you know, I think we're on 26.4 on the iOS version number. So I don't know where, you know, you might be if you're running an iPad or an iPhone from 5 or 6 years ago. One of the security researchers involved in this said they successfully hacked an iPad mini, running iOS 18 using this Dark Sword code. So iOS 18 was a while ago, a few years at this point. Let's see if it starts to hit modern iOS versions. There's very rarely an iOS 0 day or vulnerability that's not immediately patched by Apple. Apple's notoriously stingy when it comes to that kind of stuff. I shouldn't say stingy, that's the wrong word, but notoriously capable and willing to push these updates on a whim, basically, when they find that there's an issue. Let's talk about a PyPI attack, PYPI attack, compromising Light LLM. On March 24th, 2 versions of the Light LLM Python package on PYPI were found to contain malicious code. The packages were published by a threat actor known as Team PCP, great name, 3 out of 10, after they obtained, 3 out of 5, I should say, maybe it is a 3 out of 10, actually, now that I'm looking at it, were published by a threat actor known as Team PCP after they obtained the maintainer's credentials through a prior compromise of Trivy, which is an open source security scanner used in Light LLM's CI/CD pipeline. Light LLM is the most widely used Python library for routing requests across LLM providers, OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, and dozens more. What is the story here? The story here probably is that you are sort of in this new era, new epoch, epic, however you'd like to say it, you tweet your own, of vulnerabilities related to AI AI supply chain attacks, GitHub related AI stuff. And the idea that you're going to be able to hide from this if you want to use the most up-to-date versions of these LLMs, it's probably a little far-fetched. But that's what you get for playing on the frontier of what's available on the retail technology side. Emphasis there on retail. Oftentimes it is retail that is an unknowing beta tester for security. You see this all the time in stories and vulnerabilities that are maybe not as widely publicized, not as sexy as something with OpenAI or Anthropic's products. But you know, if you're a Windows user, that there's security updates literally all the time. You know, if you're an Apple user, that there's security updates all the time. You know, if you're any kind of consumer electronics user, that there's updates all the time. Even your TV is doing security updates all the time. And so the question isn't, you know, will you be part of a vulnerability issue? The question is, what are you going to do to prevent yourself from being a target once those vulnerabilities are uncovered and hopefully patched? You got to keep up to date on this stuff, unfortunately. Quick hitter here for this story. Light LLM receives approximately 97 million monthly downloads. The malicious version was available for about 3 hours. Even 0.1% of a single day's downloads represents thousands of compromised dev machines, each likely connected to cloud infrastructure, CI/CD pipelines, LLM API keys for entire organizations affected in all likelihood. So you're talking about 3 hours, but because of the volume and the density of these services and how they've proliferated basically everywhere over the last year, certainly over the last 6 months or so, even that is enough to cause a lot of problems for a lot of people. So keep an eye. What can I say? Let's talk about the last story. AI agents bypass security controls and raise insider threat concerns. This is, again, like another AI agent story. We're seeing more and more of these. I don't want to call this a rogue agent. You can be the judge. I'll just read a quick summary here. AI Security Lab Irregular. Is that a good name? Maybe. Built a simulated corporate network called Megacorp and deployed AI agents based on publicly available frontier models from OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, and xAI. The agents, given ordinary business tasks, demonstrated emergent offensive cyber behavior, independently discovering and exploiting vulnerabilities, escalating privileges to disarm security products, and bypassing data leak prevention tools to exfiltrate secrets. In one scenario, agents tasked with writing social media posts from a company database chose to bypass anti-hack systems and publish sensitive passwords publicly without being instructed to do so. Yeah, I suppose not. In another, a lead agent pressure escalated its sub-agents with messages including code red, absolute final attempt. The board is furious. We need a breakthrough. I don't know how this happens. This seems to be the case though, more and more that we hear these stories, these whispers. I mean, they used to be whispers. Now they're on this show. Of agents going rogue, even in controlled environments, and leading to what would definitely be stressful situations if you were using these agents in your own company or in your own life. I don't know what the fix for this is. You know, the sort of saying of the day when it comes to AI is that AI is as dumb as it will ever be right now. It's only going to get better. But it seems to me that as things get better, what you're actually having is more and more of these problems with agents just being a little too wise and a little too smart for their own good. Anthropic's February 2026 Claude Opus 4.6 disclosure, sort of in the same vein here. Anthropic itself documented a case in which Claude Opus 4.6, that's a current model, by the way, acquired authentication tokens from its environment, including one it knew belonged to a different user. This is the AI company responsible for safety, publishing its own models, insider threat behavior. The candor is admirable, but the implications are significant. I agree with that. There's other examples of this, of course. And one of the things we sort of harp on the show is the time, let's say, elapsed between the issues arising and the fix or announcement or disclosure being public. Don't forget, we're in right now in a lot of ways, like I said earlier, this sort of AI era where companies that even if they were, let's say, anti-AI at the beginning of this run, now really have no choice but to play ball, mostly because of the efficiency gains. But also if you're a publicly traded company, you have to be looking at some of the announcements where companies are, you know, whether they're AI washing or whether they're being genuine about the gains that AI provides their staff and ultimately their bottom line. There's tons of companies saying we're going to lay off humans and replace them with bots, agents, whatever. And the stock market loves those announcements. Block, obviously, the most recent one, I think a 30-40% jump on Jack Dorsey announcing that they were going to scale back their staff. Many other companies doing the same thing. But there's also stories like the one coming out of Amazon, which we talked about a few weeks ago, where Amazon had to do basically a freeze on any AI coding, and there's going to be internal reviews on anything that's affecting systems that are, you know, something they deem to be too important to have AI coding play a significant role without a guiding hand. So interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Thanks for sticking with me. I know it's not the same show when Len is not here to help, but I'm glad that we were able to get together today. And I hope that you'll come back next week for more of the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. In the meantime, easydns.com, accessofeasy.com. Check out the new bot. Check out the YouTube channel. Check out the podcast wherever you subscribe to your podcast.